So I'm Rick Hansen, and it's April 15th. I hope you've paid your taxes, and if not, you're still at peace with that. 2015, I think. There you are. And I wanted to talk about peace. And the title, if you will, for me here is Listen to Your Longings for Peace. And I want to kind of dive into that topic. A little earlier today, I got an email from Mark Stefanski, one of the people who's been very involved in this group, a sitting group, one of our stewards, a group of roughly a dozen people who take a lot of responsibility with me for just sort of operating this sitting group, which has at this point roughly 600 people on its email list. That's kind of a mark of how many people have come at one time or another, and a fairly stable group of probably 100 or so plus people. Any evening, maybe 50 or 60 like yourselves show up. So Mark has been very involved. He also was a biology teacher at a high school that our son went to. And the reason I'm telling you all this is that Mark's father, probably in late 80s, just passed away. And Mark sent me a picture in his email of himself and his father, and of course they look alike, which is very touching, very happily smiling together into the camera. And Mark's mother-in-law's wife's beloved mother, a friend to both of them, is also an older woman in Germany who herself is really coming to the very end of it all. And so I looked at that email, and I wanted to let you know that, first of all, in case you know Mark and want to write him at all. He sends his love, but he wanted to stay home tonight with his wife, and he said, you know, thank goodness for this kind of relationship with a mate. And I looked at that email, and what really struck me about it in that picture was, in many ways, what felt like the longing in both Mark and his father for peace. And also noticing myself, I feel a little run down today, not a big deal, but I can feel in myself a kind of longing for peace. I also have a lot of background with early childhood and the transition to parenthood. And I just think in so many parts of life, we just kind of long for peace. The peace of, you know, some sense of security. I saw a girl earlier today, an eighth grader, who's heading off to high school, and she wants to be at peace with what she's going into. I think how often parents just, oh, please, 1 minute of peace, you know. You go to the bathroom, you want to close that door, your little sanctuary, they're pounding on it. Rah, rah, daddy! You know, peace. We look out in the world, we see the news around the world, close at home, and we just want peace. And I think how often we kind of deny that longing, or set it aside, or power through it, or power over it, or satisfy some kind of, in some sense, addictive craving for that which is not so peaceful. You know, entertainment, intensity, politics. Chris Wallace's TV show, where people argue with each other all the time, you know? Hardball or something like that, and all the rest of that. But what I want to talk about is honoring that yearning. I think that's so deep in our nature for, as the Buddha put it, that highest happiness, which is peace, or I think it's from the Bible, that peace which passeth understanding. Or in Buddhism, I was thinking about the seven factors of awakening. These are causes. These are psychological factors that lead to enlightenment in that way of looking at things. And they are, you may know, mindfulness, investigation, energy, rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And of the last three, tranquility, concentration, which is not like stressing out over the SAT concentration or your taxes, but a sense of deep absorption and inner stillness. And then also, of course, equanimity. All three of those, the final progression of those factors for awakening, have to do with deep states of stillness, being undisturbed, in a word, peace. So So I wanted to kind of draw that out, encourage you to open to and explore and honor your own longings for peace, wherever they might show up for you or in whatever ways they show up for you. And I wanted to offer four suggestions about cultivating, as Thich Nhat Hanh puts it, peace in every step. Peace is every step. So, and to stress the point, I think it's very possible to be lively, to be enthusiastic, to be fierce, to be even fiery, while still in one's core having a sanctuary of inner stillness in one's roots. They're not at odds with each other. You know, in the immortal words of, I always forget which one is Ted and which one is Bill, right? Be excellent to each other and party on, dudes and dudettes, something like that. So how do we do that? Okay, so I have four suggestions. The first suggestion is to feed your own roots. So much of our agitation, our disturbance, our lack of peace with ourselves, our body, other people, is we're not taking care of ourselves enough. You know, we're pushing too hard, we're not putting enough gas in the engine, we're not changing our own internal oil, we're not taking care of our longings for love or for some fulfillment in our work, some forms of self-actualization. We're not, you know, listening to our needs for more respite, more buffers between us and the world. You know, there's too much metal on metal grinding as we go through the day. We're not eating well enough. We're not taking care of our need for sleep. You know, we get upset because we don't have enough peace, so we entertain ourselves to deal with the upset, and then we stay up too late, and the next day we're even more vulnerable to not feeling at peace, to being stressed. In many ways, the experience of stress is the opposite of the experience of being at peace. Pressure and stress, you know, that's not at peace. So honestly, really feeding the roots. And it could be that check, 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 your pre-flight list for your own roots, your own deep core needs, you're fine, you're good to go. But maybe there's something that's calling to you. You know, on your inner dashboard, right, you got green lights, yellow, and then there's that flashing amber. You know, it's talking to you. It's really important to honor that. A second thing, a suggestion I have, is a course about acceptance. I think of so many of the things that invade my mind and disturb it, they have to do in some ways with just resisting the way it is. It doesn't mean that we prefer the way it is or that we're not doing what we can to improve it, but you think about the things that interrupt your peace, or you could just look at things and you ask yourself, you know, if I were more accepting here, would I not be more at peace? I was on a flight once from at the end of a long day of teaching a workshop. I think I was in St. Louis and I had to fly to Minneapolis. I was on Delta. It was like the third day and there were a couple more to go, and you know, in the middle of that. So I don't know if you've done that kind of thing. You get on the plane and you go, all right, take off, land, taxi, hotel, peace, all right? Okay? And then the door's closed to the plane, so they've sealed it up and you're waiting for them to push away from the gate. And then we heard those words over the loudspeaker that you don't really ever want to hear. We're looking for our crew. We're trying to find a pilot. And we all started laughing, like, are you kidding me? So, oh well, Delta has like 3,500 flights a day, the left hand, the right hand, just weren't talking to each other on that one. So it took them an hour to find an emergency backup ground crew, you know, and you just hoped they hadn't been drinking too much, you know, that day. But anyway, they rolled in, and we took off. Okay, so we had a choice there. If we didn't accept the condition we were in, we would not be at peace. That's our choice. But on the other hand, I found that when I just accepted, okay, I'm here, it's not my preference, darn, including accepting my reactions. I'm irritated, okay, I accept that. I'm frustrated, I accept that. A little woebegone voice, you know, like the inner, you know, crawl on your inner TV screen. Why don't people take better care of me? Why do I have to do this? Whatever it was, accepting all that, because if I fought it, I wouldn't be at peace with my inner crawl, right? The inner voice in the back of my head, the inner thought balloon. Yeah, accepting. So you might want to think about what happens when you accept or don't accept in terms of what brings you to peace. And the things you're not peaceful about, you know, money, relationships, aging, the body, your friends. I talked with someone earlier today who was talking about someone whose young adult son was just involved in drunk driving with a hit-and-run situation. So my friend's son is headed into a serious jail term and felony, you know, vehicular manslaughter. It was hit-and-run. Wow, you know. So can we accept that that's the way it is for that mother, her son? Can we be at peace with that in some way? You know, obviously not preferring it, but accepting it. So that's my second suggestion, acceptance. The third suggestion, and then we'll talk about it, is to get out of the struggle with objects and people. And there I was just found myself thinking about doing the dishes. And I don't know about you, but people do dishes in different ways. And I live with two other people, my wife and my son. And, you know, so the way I do dishes, which is, of course, the right way to do dishes, is I like stack the plates and I don't put any silverware between the plates. So they stack neatly. And I put the plates on the bottom and the heavy frying pans under that, the bowls on top of that. You know, I have at least one of the 10 genes for OCD, I admit it. My wife would argue with my number, but anyway. And I go, you know, and then you get more there and you work around, it just seems like an efficient way to do it. Plus there's kind of the elegant, tranquil beauty of that pile of dishes. I can just look at that pile of orderly dishes, right? All right, you see where this is going. So I come in. Very often, they've done it the wrong way again. They put those forks and spoons in, the whole thing's toppling over, the fragile glasses are sitting on top or underneath the heavy frying pans. Like, don't they know? So every so often, I'll just roll in. And I especially like doing it when other people can hear. And I just start moving those dishes around very forcefully and loudly, clattering away. It's wrong, okay? So I'm, you know, I'm struggling. I'm in a struggle with these physical objects. Or if you have other things like that, like you can't get a drawer open, like, as if the drawer is responding to your anger, right? Or, you know, like, you start, like the keyboard, you're trying to get an email, you're hitting the key harder, you know? Or like the phone machine, you pull on it, right? We struggle with objects. You probably have other examples of that. Okay? Or the hair, you know, like, okay, right? Okay, so you know what I'm talking about here. You just think of all the things we bang or yank or pull or shove. We're not at peace. We're not at peace with that. We're in a struggle. Not peaceful. That's obviously we do what we can, you know, we guide things, but that's not a struggle. And then I think about struggles with people. Wow. You know, I think about all the wasted stress and suffering I've exerted by, in my mind, just yelling at people on TV whose politics I don't like. Right? There I am, just bleh. Or, you know, you find yourself caught in these subtle quarrels with other people. Like for moral superiority, right? Who's taking more for the team, right? Who's suffering more for the greater good? Or, you know, these forms of like arguing with people about little funny, silly things. Like, is the year 2000 really the millennium? Or is it 2001? And, you know, you're caught up in that. Or other forms of contentiousness with other people. And I remember reading this monk who I respected a lot, Ajahn Amaro, who very far along, you know, very, to me, admirable person. And he was describing his own personal practice was to get out of contentiousness. And I thought, wow, this is someone, I've been on a board with him, I've seen a lot of contentious situations. He was cool as a cucumber, but he's working on contentiousness inside his own mind, that kind of Velcro-like struggle with other people. We make a case about them. We get invested in our own rightness. We do these subtle little things, right? A little eye roll, a little look, a little word. Really? You know, those little things right? They can feel it. We can feel it. We can feel it flip the other way when they're being contentious with us. Really? You know, or sure. You know, little things, tone. And then we could tell it. Obviously, they can feel it. They can tell it when we do it themselves. So think about getting out of the struggle. Doesn't mean not asserting. Doesn't mean not doing what we can. But getting out of the struggle that's so not peaceful. And then the last thing I wanted to suggest in this kind of progression here from pretty concrete to maybe more and more subtle is to find the peace that's inherent in this moment of experiencing. Now, as soon as you analyze this moment of experiencing, it's become static. Okay, it's like a freeze frame. That's okay. But more and more, we want to disengage from understanding these static freeze frame images that enable us to understand experience. And we want to move more into just being processed. Okay. So I want to just call out some things that other people, myself included, have pointed to that you might connect with about the peace that's available inherently in any moment of experiencing, no matter how painful or upsetting the experience itself is, the content is. Okay. So one thing that people talk about, even quite traditionally, especially in Tibet, is they'll talk about the sky of mind, or awareness is like the sky or a space. And because it has no edges to it, if you look experientially, not mystically, we're not doing anything mystical so far, but so far, you just look at experience, wow, awareness itself doesn't have a bound or an edge or a perimeter. It is boundless. It's limitless, like space. Okay, so you can imagine awareness as a space through which experience proceeds or flows. You know, consciousness streaming through a space. Or you could say the streaming through consciousness. And if you just observe, the stuff moving through awareness is could be very unpeaceful, very disturbed or disturbing. But awareness itself is just this space. It's kind of like the sky itself is never disturbed by the vultures flying through it, or the bombers, or the storm clouds. So you can explore in your own experience, wow, in this experience, there is an aspect of experiencing the field of experience, or the space in which experience unfolds, that is inherently peaceful. The sky is peaceful. Or think of this, a TV screen. What moves through it can be all kinds of stuff, but the TV screen itself is undisturbed by what moves through it. Okay? That's an inquiry. That's an exploration. It's really quite profound. And a lot of fairly intermediate to advanced practice really engages this. The trick, the watch out, is to not identify with awareness as a thing, as me, because then you start to reify it and cling to it. But that in mind, this recognition of awareness itself as a space that things move through can be very powerful. Ajahn Sumedho, very senior American-born monk in our tradition, our lineage, said, trust in awareness itself rather than in continually changing conditions. Awareness itself is stable. Okay? You might relate to that. Second major thing that's pointed to, that's intrinsic in experience, and is therefore a potential refuge for us at all times, always available inherently in experiencing, is that sense of some of a kind of fundamental stability in the witnessing. And that's very close to awareness itself. The witnessing itself feels very calm, right? It feels more personal than awareness, which has kind of an impersonal quality. But witnessing, again, being careful not to reify the witnessing process into a witness entity that then we identify with and cling to as a self. But witnessing, if you just kind of look at what's, you can feel deep down. People talk about bear witnessing, or the witness position, or pure witness, or the witness. It feels very deeply calm and untroubled. Often it has a subtle quality as well of a kind of tenderness. You know, we're like, oh. You know, including everything, oh. Right? That might be something to relate to. A third, and these often kind of overlap each other, but people talk about them in different ways and relate to them, and they're kind of go-tos for different people in different ways. A third one is a kind of sense somehow, somewhere in the core of being of a kind of stillness. A kind of, it just feels like stillness. And it's like around the stillness, things are moving. But it feels as if there is some fundamental still point, you know, at the essence somehow of all the movement. Neurologically, what I think is also a kind of physical analog to what I'm trying to talk about here experientially, as close to experience as I can, is that in the neural substrates that support consciousness, or hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, thinking, feeling, remembering, planning, and all the rest of that, again, nothing mystical. Those neural substrates basically involve, certainly trillions of synapses, little tiny microprocessors at the junctions between neurons. These synapses form, they kind of synchronize with each other. They form networks. Those become the basis for hearing, tasting, thinking, planning, remembering, and dreaming, and so forth. And various coalitions of synapses get enlisted into this vast neural substrate of consciousness that's very dynamic, okay? For that substrate of consciousness to work, it needs to form patterns that stabilize and create a kind of order. This group of neurons, this group of synapses, are firing in synchrony with each other as the neural basis for the sound of my finger clicking, just like that, right? They stabilize, they cohere, they form a pattern. Signal emerges out of noise, right? There's some stabilization that's necessary for any stabilization of an experience, an idea, a sound, a memory. But for that stabilization to occur, it's like eddies coalescing out of, chaos, and then they disperse and become available again, those synapses, those processes, for the next pattern. Next meaning, next sound, next thought. But for that to happen, there's got to be a fundamental background of unused capacity, fertile noise, as it were, that's ongoing. It's as if for us to use a chalkboard, it has to have empty space on it or the ability to erase what we wrote on it. But that fundamental blank space or fundamental fertile noise that can coalesce into representing and stabilizing some conditioned pattern, right? That background sense of fertile noise, to me, is the neural analog to that background field of awareness, which is vaster than the various contents it represents. And you can kind of intuit that. You can feel how there's this background fizzing, kind of the wallpaper of mind, that's always ready to represent something new, but hasn't yet. I think of it, like I said, fertile noise, quivering potentiality, just waiting to coalesce into some meaning and then disperse again to be available anew. And then last, as a basis for peace, and see what you relate to in all this, and then we'll talk about it. Often a lot of this really, it's cool to look deeply into the nature of experience. That was the Buddha's progression. He had a lot to say about content, but more than anything, he talked about process, the nature of experiencing. A lot where this shows up in life is to quit jamming our car through traffic, or jamming drawers back in the bureau, or jamming our point of view down the throat of other people. Pretty concrete and grounded. But that said, it is very profound and powerful to have access to the peace that is intrinsically available in any moment of experiencing. So the last one is, again, if it's meaningful to you, people talk about, they have a sense of, I do myself, of a kind of unconditionality or fundamental something or other in which reality as we know it rests. And people often intuit that, you know, no matter how nutty it all gets, there is a fundamental peacefulness that holds everything. And if that is meaningful to you as an exploration or a development, great, that's the offering. Okay. So, I feel more peaceful now than when I began. What do you think? What do you think about your own heartfelt longings for peace? And honoring them, taking them seriously, making peace more of a priority, even seeing the longings in others for peace. They don't really want to fight, even while they're fighting, at some deeper level, you know? All right, what do you make of all this? Great.
Well, I've had some success with the witnessing, particularly in big family gatherings.
Uh-huh. Do you want to speak up a little? That'd be helpful. Great.
Well, the witnessing, I think, is for me particularly effective in large family gatherings. Uh-huh. But, you know, it's elusive, too, because quickly the judgment starts creeping in. You know? And then the witnessing is not so fun anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I do think sometimes about Margaret Mead, you know, investigating the cannibals, sort of, not that my in-laws eat human flesh any longer, but, you know, like, what is it like to have that attitude? Just like, wow, amazing, you know. Anyway, but sure, I got it. But that's an interesting, you know, like being a journalist or an anthropologist, you know. Anyway, okay.
Just pure curiosity.
Yeah, yeah, like, wow. You know, okay. Other comments? Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking about how there's a part of me that I'm tempted to label the ego from what I've heard, but I don't actually know. But there's a part that feels like peace is almost like a consolation prize to something else, as if it thought life would be a certain way, and then peace is kind of settling.
Ah.
And so there's,
you must be an American, because there are a lot of culture about this. But no, I'm kidding. But keep going. Yeah, peace is a kind of settling.
It is.
It's a booby prize, right?
It's like giving up.
Uh huh.
And then, like, surrendering sounds a lot like giving up.
Yeah.
Yet when I've actually experienced it, it's priceless and irreplaceable.
Yeah.
So it's really it's fascinating to me that it still seems like something to be avoided somehow. Even though I've always had positive experiences of it before.
Oh, I really appreciate you sharing that. I think you're speaking, you know, for lots of people, me included sometimes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Other people, comments? Including, in, yeah, go on.
I really resonated with this idea of bearing witness, particularly in situations where you're bearing witness to intense suffering or sorrow, loss, or, you know, you're in sitting in the midst of some painful things. And I love your idea of just this calm and tenderness, this place that you can find within yourself in the midst of all that.
Yeah. I know it is so interesting. Like, I had a teacher for a while, and it is temple, one of his temples. People, as a gift, were planting a beautiful tree. It was in Hawaii. And they were trying to get this tree kind of just right, like me and my dishes, but anyway. And they just couldn't do it. And finally, the teacher ultimately said, no, it's fine. Leave it alone. Grace leans. You know? And there, you can relate to it in a transcendental theistic frame or not, but either way, there is something that it's like this, oh, you know, recognizing, tendering, you know, something like that, coming together. Anyway, you might find that in your own witnessing. And I think in that, honestly, is this inherent longing for peace. Like, isn't it true? We're just tired of trouble, you know? We want to keep participating. We still are engaged. We want to have fun. But can't you just kind of feel it in your bones? Like, man, I'm just tired of the wars. Tired of the struggle, tired of the hassle. I'm tired of the pressure. Peace, you know, not numbness, not deadness, just, wow, peace. Yeah.
This is my first time here tonight, and I love everything you're saying. And what resonates with me is a word called reverence.
Yeah.
And it is hard being a human feeling deep pain or watching suffering.
Yeah.
And sometimes one might leave your body, because I know I've experienced when there's harshness or discourse between people or bad things happening or politics, or it's this whole ability to get yourself to teach your brain and your mind and everything that you have inside of you to this picture or this blank space that you're talking about. I love the metaphor of, I call it a committee, you know, this constant barrage of your judgments on this or something else, and I feel myself generating anxiety or sadness or confusion or suffering because I can't affect change. And I know what I can affect in the nervous system is teaching my body to get to a place that our society doesn't basically teach us how to do as children, because we're taught certain things, certain ways, and sometimes there's no room for that wanting to find the peace of being in our bodies and in this world. So thank you very much. I love your Dharma.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's not my own.
of everything.
No, thank you. Yeah, it is interesting. More people too, please, and then you, yeah.
So for me, peace is this experience of feeling good. It just feels good. And I think, and that's what I want.
Yeah.
I want that for myself and everyone else.
Could you say a little more about, like, different kinds of feeling good? Like, I felt really great when the San Francisco Giants won the World Series. I would not describe that as peaceful. You know, I was like, but say more.
To peace.
Yeah.
It just feels, but it takes over the mind, the body, and it's, for me, it's where I want to hang out.
Yeah.
Not always possible. But I can't think of a time when I was peaceful and not feeling good.
Right. Yeah. You might, thank you for saying that, you know, you might visualize even for yourself almost as if there's a sanctuary inside yourself. What would it look like or feel like, this place of unshakable inner peace that's utterly protected, right? It's no matter what happens around it, nothing can get in. You know, you might, like I am imagining sort of the essence of a lot of temples or churches, etc. I've been in, but settled in nature, but somehow inside, right? That could be a powerful practice to have a felt sense of that or even imagine it. Even that place is there, even as you're a stockbroker on the floor of the Chicago Exchange or something, or working as a police officer, or, you know, dealing with kids who are arguing with each other. That someplace inside, though, can be a place that nothing can violate. Nothing, no barbarians can overrun it. All right. Yeah, please.
Two things.
Yeah.
One is that when I go by an accident scene, I was thinking about changing the word, but now I'm sure I'm not going to change it. I always say, may they know peace.
Thank you.
And the second thing is that I've sought peace my whole life, and I've meditated for years and done psychotherapy and been part of communities, and basically I've done the right things. But I'm a very anxious person, and
yeah.
I know that place of peace, but I can't find it when I need it most.
Yeah.
So I feel like, why is it that my friends change, and I can see them change from therapy or meditation or whatever, and I don't seem to have. Although, my husband tells me that I have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's kind of the expert besides me. But, yeah, I seek that peace.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being so honest. You know, you serve everybody else with your honesty. And, you know, as someone just, I think it's fair to say I have a lot of knowledge of the nervous system and how it learns and changes through practices. A person can't engage practices in a sincere way, in a sustained way, without changing the nervous system. You know, it takes its shape from what it rests upon. So if we are routinely resting our minds upon things like relaxing the body systematically, or letting go of old grievances, or having insight into irrational fears and so forth, inevitably there is a change in a learning process. So if one is really trying to help it sink in deeply, I think there's little that's more powerful than helping oneself have experiences of what we long for. Wholesome, powerful experiences, as rich and embodied, intense as possible, whatever that is, as sacred as possible, if that means something to you. Letting oneself have those experiences that we long for. We so often push away that which we most long for. But instead, letting our minds, which means our nervous system, our brains, rest upon these experiences, these ways of being that we most long for, and really rest there. And in the process of resting there again and again and again, 10,000 times, 10 seconds at a time, internalizing that way of being, so more and more it becomes the habit of our mind. More and more it becomes our resting state. And I think if someone is interested in a quality of like deep peace, when you find it or you can experience it in this exhaling, there is peace. There is peace in this inhaling. Right? Just sitting, the body, there is peace. This chair is at peace. You know. The smell of this rose is peace, right there, in the click of that finger, peace, right? When we have that, you know, really, don't waste it on your brain. Give you over to it. I've just seen that, honestly. I'm a guy in the trenches, just crawling my way up the slopes of Mount Doom with Frodo by my side, You're Frodo. I'm Sam. You have the ring. You know what I mean? Like, and I just have a lot of faith. And like that little bit, plus that little bit, plus that little bit, really, really adds up over time. So it's helping ourselves have it. And oftentimes, I think, we're afraid of that which we most long for. We have an intuition of what would be most wholesome, a vulnerable expression, a vulnerable cry of the heart, you know, or just seeing our commonality with other people, or just kind of knowing that my day will probably come where I'm the father and my son is in the picture sending an email to his friends that his dad has passed away. And yet my heart longs for the kind of inclusion of that inevitable eventual reality. Letting yourself have that too, right? Or letting yourself have the experience where the body just comes at rest. Or just the letting it in. Doesn't your heart long for the real deeply felt sense that so much of what I've been afraid about is just a bunch of bullshit? Right? Isn't that such a relief? We long for relief. Right? Letting ourselves have that too. So anyway, I just say that and maybe finish on this one kind of point. Anxiety is just another experience. Right? Fear, anxiety, just another experience. The two experiences we tend to most privilege, because they have big impact on survival, is fear and the sense of I, sense of self. And if we relate to them as, oh, they're just experiences like any other, that fear, in other words, is like the taste of chocolate or the sound of my knuckles. It's just an experience. Or the sense of I is just one more mental content like any other. It's not special. It's not privileged, right? We don't immediately defer to it. Oh, fear. Oh, the inner dictator. Oh. We don't do that. We just go, oh, yeah, you too, right? You too. Then we start realizing that, you know, there's no inherent problem in fear per se as an experience. It's like there's no inherent problem in a sound or a sight or a thought. It's just a sound, a sight, a thought. Even the sense of I, there's no inherent problem in it. And you start realizing that, oh, I can be at peace with fear. I want to use it appropriately to see if there's a real threat or not, take appropriate action, but I can be at peace with fear. You can be at peace while being afraid. You know, you can be at peace with anger. Anger is just another experience. Pain is just another experience. Do what we can about it, but you can see that there's an inherent peace in fear, right? Just like there's an inherent peace in exhaling as an experience. It's trippy to pursue this inquiry, but you could see it. Okay. May you be at peace, truly, truly at peace. It's almost like the greatest gift we would wish for anyone. What do the great teachers wish for us? You know, they have these incredible transformations. Often they'll go through extraordinary suffering or privations, you know, in any tradition you name, or including secular traditions, people clearly who have a profound wisdom. You know, what do they most generally want to give to people? May you be at peace. So how about we sit with this for a minute, peacefully? it's easy to relate to this stuff as we're trying to shove a peacefulness on ourselves. You know, calm down, right? Get quiet. That's not it. It's more like allowing and opening a sort of blossoming peace from the inside out. Okay. Baby at peace. Peace upon you. Take care.